Yep. So today is actually Wednesday. No, it is officially Thursday, the 8th. Thursday, September 8th at 12:08 in the absolute morning. Since I like to stay up late and since I don't like procrastinating, I'm going to do my podcast here and now with you. And I've decided that today I'm going to talk about a couple of fun things that I've learned through the YouTubes here, as well as a couple other things that have been going on in my life. So this one YouTube video I was watching, it says 5 ways to tell if your bird is bonded with you. And I was like, all right, let's go ahead and take a look into it. Now, the number one thing that it says here is that your bird wants to be near you. All right, I can dig that. I can definitely dig that. If you guys see my TV almost at the end of every day going forward with how I have my new setup here, the boys absolutely love being right next to me. Blue really enjoys being near me. It's kind of funny because like they talk about how it's like, oh, a scared bird or a bird is still deciding will walk away from you, or they'll do this or they'll do that. I'm like, all right, that's fair enough. I can get down into that. Like, I can get it. But like, Blue's been living with me for like the last 7 years now. I think we're like on year 7 if Facebook is correct here. There is no way that goofy little blue nugget of hate and anger and kisses hates me, or you know, is still trying to make up his mind if he likes me or not. Because like, it's absolutely hilarious how Blue will be like, "I want to be near you, Dad, but I don't really really want to be near you." I'm like, okay, buddy, that's obviously fair. That really is obviously fair. But, like, if I get near him, it's funny because in the video, the guy, or I should say the person who is typing the words out for the digital man to read, that I don't know if you guys ever watched those, like, Reddit reads or whatever, where it's a digital guy actually reading it, is pretty cool. But, like, he's like, yeah, your bird wants to be near you. They want to interact with you. They want to be on your shoulder constantly. They want to come out of their cage and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, they love being out of their hidey hole. Blue loves to literally sit on the TV perched right above my workstation. He'll actually sometimes perch on one of my O-ring lights if they aren't on. He'll frequently come onto my computer. He's been known to actually fly in the back of my chair to check out what's going on. If I watch TV, I'll be sitting in my chair. And in my chair, I'll literally be sitting there and he'll like perch right next to me. Like if there's a perch that is right at about eye level, he comes down and sits at eye level. And unless there's not a perch at eye level, he sits at about the top of the cage out there. Helios is the exact opposite. If he wants me to come get him, he wants me to come make him step up. And he's like, no, Dad, you gotta come get me. You gotta pick me up. And I'm like, dude, you're 20. You can fly. Not very well. You can fly. Not very well at all. But you can fly, big guy. Blue finally has his full flight wings back, which is pretty awesome sauce. But it is quite hilarious. The hilarity ensues when Blue does like come to me and hang out with me. Like today, he spent, I want to say, the better hour of 3 or 4 hours of my entire workday sitting right next to me. I think that for 3 of the hours that I was working, he was actually on the TV, which means that I have to clean the back of the TV. I got to find a better way to clean the TV and keep it clean. And for my hour at lunch, I'm pretty sure that for like, 40 of the minutes, he sat right next to me. But in the video, they were like, oh, yeah, your bird wants to be near you. But if your bird, if you walk up next to your bird and they run away from you, that's a sign that they may not be bonded to you. I'm like, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. Like, Blue and Helios run away from me all the time. And I think it's because whenever I approach their cage, I get, like, really excited. I'm like, hey, fellas, what's up? And, Blue will even, like, rush at me, like, try to bite me. I know that they're pretty cage aggressive, and I know that they're pretty aggressive towards their living spaces. And there's no real way to get around what I have without basically ruining their lives for the better part of the next couple of months and making my life a little hellish through the winter. Because really the only way that I could do this is I would make quite a few adjustments. I'd have to put their cage entirely back together, because one of the biggest things that I hated was having them caged. And then also cleaning the bottom of the cage out was always a problem. So I did open up on two of the sides of the cage. So it's more like a jungle gym that they live in. And then they have a hidey hole where they can go to sleep. Because at night I like to play my video games and sometimes I like to watch TV. And so instead of them having to have the reflection of the TV, they're in this little enclosed capsule, which is pretty awesome sauce that they get to hang out in. I don't have to worry too much about them doing anything, you know, at night or being affected by the light that I shine into them. But yeah, it's one of the big things that I really hate is that I know that there's one of two ways that I could do this. I could give them a place that makes them feel like their own, and I know that they can get a little cage aggressive, or, and this is a big or, I could basically make it so that their life is completely open concept. They have no concept of privacy, and everything is always out and about and in the open. And I feel like giving them that little bit of privacy and that little, this is my home, this is my home base, it bonded them really well together, which is exactly what I wanted. Them to be a really nice bonded pair and love each other and care for each other the way that they do. So that way when I do leave, which is quite frequently at the end of my trips here, at the end of my days, they have a buddy to hang out with and they're really comfortable with each other. The number two thing is that it's like your bird copies you. And I was like, okay, yeah. Helios and Blue most definitely copy me. Like when I get excited, Helios gets excited. When I get excited, Blue gets excited. I sing the Feetsies song. It's so dumb, but it's like one little, two little, three little toesies, four little, five little, six little toesies, seven little, eight little, that's all the toesies that the little birdies have. I know that was really, really cringe, and I apologize, but that is what I call the toesies song. And it's funny because an ex-girlfriend of mine was around me when I was singing that to him, and I was like, the toesies song, the toesies song. And she's like, what's the toesies song? So I sang it for her. And she's like, wait, birds only have eight toes? And I was like, you've had a hoppy for how long? And you didn't. I was like, look, one, two, three, four. That's one footsies. One, two, three, four. She's like, wow, they only got four toesies. I was like, yeah, they only got four toesies. But Helios will bob his head up and down. He'll do a cute little chirp. And Blue, I think Blue's just very, very skittish. And the reason why I think Blue is extremely skittish is because with Blue, when I adopted Blue, his feathers were garbage. They looked horrible. They looked really, really bad. And it was because he was kept in a cage. The dude had two dogs. He had a cat. And he smoked in the house a lot. And so I think Blue was kept in this tiny, tiny little bird cage for the longest while. And I wasn't even planning on adopting Blue, and I'll maybe tell that story here in just a second about how I adopted Blue and how I came to get Blue to begin with. But Blue is very reserved in his excitement. He is very reserved. He'll be quick to aggression. Trust me, he's very quick to aggression because he's my Blue nugget of hate and anger all rolled up into kisses. But if I walk up to him and I'm like, "Hey, Blue, give me kisses. Give me some kisses. Give me kisses," and then he'll put his beak to my nose. And he does the little sound a little bit. Sometimes he's really loud with it. Sometimes he'll actually say, "Gimme kiss." Blue can be very vocal at times, but he can also be very soft-spoken at sometimes. Like, he'll want to give me a kiss, but he's like, "I'm doing this just because you're asking, Dad." And he'll put his nose up to me, and I'll see his mouth move, and he goes, and I'm like, that's good enough, buddy. Thank you. And then I've been, because one of his favorite treats is tortilla. Or a piece of bread or something like that. I know it's like really horrible for birds, so I give it to him like every once in a while. But when he's really good about giving me a kiss or something like that, I give him a little bit of a, you know, tortilla, just a little bit to satisfy him, just because it reinforces that he's good. But yeah, their excitement, like when I come home, they come and greet me. They're happy to see me. You know, it the excitement is definitely there, and I think that's kind of cool. And then what is the next one here? Oh. They're like, "Yeah, your bird sings or talks to you." I'm like, "Okay." Helios does not sing to me at all. Helios could fucking care less to talk to me. I mean, if you count his screeches where he's like, "Rah! Rah!" Like, yeah, okay, that's talking to me. Like, yeah, I mean, he's trying something. Like, he's making noise at me, which is fucking hilarious. But Blue will talk to me. Like, he'll legitimate have that South Park. Like, he'll literally do that. Or he'll be like, rap, you know, or just be like, give me a kiss, good boy, step up. Like, he'll actually say shit and, like, talk to me, which is kind of interesting. He doesn't do it all the time. He does it every so often, out there. And so, yeah, like, they do it every so often. Like, they're not an Indian ringneck. Like, if you want a bird that talks and uses a lot of human mimicry and are known for being chatterboxes, like chatterbox parrots, check them out. Or just look up Indian ringneck talking. And then the final bit here that, you know, asks to be pet. I was like, all right. I gotta listen to this. And for like the last minute of the video, the guy's here is like, yeah, you know, like a bird is gonna ask you to get pet. Like a bird is gonna ask you to let you pet them, or, you know, like, hey, I want physical human contact. I'm like, Blue hates stepping up for me. He'll sit on my shoulder as long as Helios is there. And that's a whole nother realm of weirdness about them. But like, they're like, oh, they asked to be pet. And I'm like, no, the fuck they don't. Blue loves getting the pets. Like, I call them the scritches. Blue loves getting scritches, you know, when I ask him to give me a kiss and he steps up and he gives me a couple kisses, and then I'll give him some head scratchies for fucking 10, 15 minutes easy when he's just hanging out there. And then Helios doesn't like to be like, I can flip him upside down and put him on his back and give him some head scratchies that way, but he's only tolerant for about 4 or 5 scratches. Where I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he's like, all right, that's fucking enough, Dad. You can stop this shit. But, like, he'll stay upside down on my palm for a long time if I'm talking to him, if I'm making him feel real positive. And then I can actually throw him up in the air. I won't throw him. I'm not throwing, like, a 95-mile-an-hour baseball. But, like, I loft him ever so lightly and gently into the air. And then he flips over and he flies to the cage. He's like, that was fun, but don't do that again. Not today. Maybe in a week. But yeah, like, Blue never asked to be pet. He asks for kisses a lot. Helios does not want me touching him at all. Like, I can give him head scratchies, but like, I had to work for that. Cause like, I'll flip him upside down and I'll try to have like my girlfriend or some of the girls in the past have tried to pet Helios. And Helios is like, no, thank you. No, thank you whatsoever. So yeah. That was one of the things that I thought was a little bullshit. And then like, oh, but your bird's personality and their age could be, you know, like if a bird has been kept in a cage for years. I was like, I adopted Helios at 15. There's not much I'm going to be teaching Helios at all going forward in his lifetime at all. And with Blue, like I said, when I adopted Blue, like, he was a scared little nugget. He really, really was. And then Harley, you know, basically blew the shell right off of him, because Blue was like, oh, there's another thing like me here. I have a friend. And, you know, I let him live in an open concept. The cages were never closed. But yeah. So the 5 ways to tell if your bird is bonded to you. Like, I know the boys are bonded to me. It's just, to what level are they bonded with me? Because I know that Helios is ridiculously bonded. Like, I am his dude. I could basically take Helios out into the wide world, and instead of flying off, Helios will fly, and this is something that actually did happen not too long ago, where I thought I almost lost Blue because the door was open. But when a bird gets scared, usually they fly away. They fly away from wherever that, because the danger is close by and they think there's danger. Helios will fly down. Like, he can fly straight. He could probably fly from... And it's probably because he's super old and he doesn't like to fly. But Helios could probably fly for a good minute before he's just like, I'm fucking done. I'm done. I'm tired. I'm fat. I'm tired. I try to exercise them as much as they do. They, like, actually frequently fly throughout the house throughout the day, which is kind of adorable. But Blue could fly fairly well for quite some time. And he can gain altitude because he is fully flighted. I almost lost Blue one day because I was opening the door and there was a loud bang outside, and Blue basically saw an opening to a wide world outside and was like, safety in distance, and took off. He didn't get too far, actually, because he stopped where he was, and I think it was like 10 to 15 minutes later, by the time Alex got out there and we were looking for him, Blue actually started calling out to me, so I was able to locate him based on his call. and I did bring him back safely, thank God. But Helios will literally, if there is a loud sound, he flies about 4 or 5 flaps away from me, realizes he's leaving the safety of Dad, and then actually circles down around to my feet. So like he's like, look, you're bigger than I am, so I'm going to get underneath you and I should be fine. And then he'll either crawl up my pant leg and get back up to my shirt, or he'll ask to be, or he'll like sit on my foot and beg to be let up. So yeah, Helios is very, very bonded to me. I know that for a fact. Blue, I think is a little bonded to me. I think he's about 75 or 80% bonded to me. And I'll tell you why, because I have time to fill and things I need to say. I think Blue's only 75 to 80% bonded with me just for the simple fact that with Blue, when I adopted him, he was living with a gentleman who kept him in a very small cage. I mean, the recommended bird size for that cage was correct. It was the correct size. But to me, like if you take a cockatiel, if you take a Senegal, a green cheek conure, a blue monk, a green, where sometimes it was a Quaker parrot, a caique, you know, a lot of those medium sized, what I consider to be like more of a medium sized birds, you want to put them in an enclosure that is meant for like your large sized birds, your African grays, your macaws. I feel like that size for a bird is better just simply because it's an upgrade. I feel like they should have way more room to move around than anything else. And I think it's bullshit when people have these like tiny little cages and they're like, oh, this is my travel cage. Oh, okay, good. It's your travel cage. And you look at the travel cage and you're like, that's a pretty big fucking travel cage. So I trust you. And then like you get home and you see these elaborate little layouts and shit like that. And it's funny because like I tried to do that with the boys with their elaborate layout. I don't give a fuck. I've got toys that have never been touched in the 6 months now that I've had them. You know, they don't really care too much. They get all their enjoyment from unsolved mysteries, from the world around them, because they're constantly looking out the window. Dad is constantly home working from home, so they have me or the TV talking at them or interacting with them or gaming. They don't play with toys. Like, I find it hilarious that, like, a lot of people are like, where are their toys? It's like, they don't fucking play with toys. They don't ever play with toys. The most that they do is jiggle the carabiners that the toys hang from. Like, that is the vast majority of what I see them play with their toys. They get a lot of enrichment and engagement from everything else that we do. They're very satisfied, happy boys. You know, they don't pluck their feathers. They don't do anything. They're very excited to live the life that they live. And I think a lot of it just has to do with the fact that I can work from home, which is a blessing in disguise. But no, Blue, when I adopted Blue, like I said, he was living in an appropriate sized cage per many manufacturers' recommendations, as well as other folks' recommendations. And also because I think the industry is like, oh, this is perfect for the birds, so we can upcharge you thousands, you know, hundreds of dollars for this thing that probably should only cost about $100 or whatever. But then again, maybe I'm just a stingy fuck. But as soon as I got home, I introduced Blue to Harley, and it was like a night and day difference, you know, a night and day difference between what Blue was like, because he was a very nervous bird. He didn't really want to be let out too much. He was a little he was very shy. He didn't really know what was going on. And I think he was about a year old. He was a year or less than a year old by the time I adopted him. And when I was looking for a buddy for Harley, I was just looking for a playmate, somebody that, you know, I called it the young blood for the old buck, you know, or the old bull to maybe reinvigorate some life. Because Harley, caiques are known as clowns. They're clown birds. He wasn't a yellow-headed caique. He was just a regular caique. Caique or caique, I don't know how the fuck you pronounce it. Google has told me one thing, and then a bunch of other people tell me another. I'm going to call him a caique, just because I think it's a more interesting term. And I think they're also from Africa as well, too. So I don't know. But yeah, Harley was, they're known as clown birds. Like, he would frequently hang hang vertically from the cage. Like, he'd put one foot on the top of a cage and one foot on the side. And then, like, he'd reach back with his head and just do so, like, he'd just bob up and down. I'm like, the fuck are you doing, dude? And he's like, I'm just having fun. You know, he would sing heavy metal with me. He'd try to steal my food constantly. He would frequently come hang out with me, watch TV. He would cuddle up on my shoulder. You know, like when we were watching TV or when I would come home, he'd make little sounds to let me know that he's excited that I'm home. Like, he was just a clowny bird, but I knew that he was 25. I think he was 24 or 25. And, you know, that's kind of the end of their existence. He was an old guy. And I was like, look, I'm going to get him a friend for the end of the season. And I didn't anticipate to adopt Blue right away. Like, I went there with the money. I went there with the anticipation that if I fell in love with this bird, I was going to adopt him. And I got there, and Blue's feathers just did not look like they were clean. It looked like he was he looked distressed. He looked very distressed, very shy, very secluded. You know, two large breed dogs, you know, like labs. And I think the guy had a German Shepherd and something else, but you know, they're about that 80 to 90 pounds. And then the guy had a cat as well, too. I'm like, fuck. And then the dude was literally smoking a cigarette when I came into the apartment. And I was like, fuck. And I asked the guy, I was like, hey, man, did you clip his wings? And he's like, yeah, I clipped him. And I looked at him and I'm like, dude, you clipped the fuck out of these wings. Like, these are some super clipped wings. And it actually took quite a while for Blue's wings to grow back. Before he was able to shed him. But I remember I brought him home. We took him out of the cage. We had him hanging out in the car. It was me and my girlfriend, Emily at the time, who introduced me to parrots. And I just, like, it was an experience. It really was, like, watching him learn everything about the car. It was like the first time he had been out in a car or done something with a car. Like, it was his first time exploring a house. Like, when he first got home, I mean, I would frequently find Harley in Blue's cage or Blue in Harley's cage. I would watch him on the baby baby and infrared night vision monitor that I had, where like Harley would like wake up and go hang outside Blue's cage, or Blue would be hanging outside Harley's cage, you know. During when I would wake up in the mornings, Blue would be already out and about, like hanging out next to Harley and his, you know, on one of the exterior perches. And I would find them frequently together. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, he's making a friend. He's being socialized. He's becoming a part of the world. And yeah, I thought it was adorable how I basically reintroduced Blue to, like, look, dude, this isn't a bad world. And I think he's super, super hesitant of people because when I would interact with Blue, you know, I'm always checking his wings to make sure he's doing okay. I'm checking his plumage to make sure he's doing all right. Actually, Harley Helios hasn't been looking too bad with his bald spots underneath his wings. They haven't ever gotten bigger since I've owned him. You know, they are excited. They're happy to see me. They love it when I wake up. Blue constantly comes to check on me in the mornings. Like, they wake up at about 6 or 7 in the morning. I'm up at about, you know, 8 or 8:30, sometimes 9:50, 5 minutes before I'm supposed to get into work. But yeah, like, they're constantly checking up on me. And Blue is one of the first ones to try to wake me up and check on me. Like, I remember I would always have a recreation center for them to sit on or hang out with, or a play place right next to my bed. So that way, if they wanted to visit me, they could just walk on in and hang out with me. Blue, like, every morning without fail, Blue was right there at the, you know, on the hangout center, or he's always coming in and hanging out on my TV, checking to make sure I'm okay, just kind of waiting for me to wake up. I mean, I can't count how many mornings I've literally woken up to the sound of Blue's flappy flap wings flying in and out of my bedroom, checking to make sure I'm doing okay, or his maybe a little squeak to, you know, like, check it, like, hey, is everything going okay? And then Helios, like, hey, is everything all right in there? And then he'll make a little chirp and, you know, he'll watch me wake up. I'll sit up on the end of my bed. I'll literally look over at him and I'll be like, morning, Blue. And he's like, all right, Dad's awake. And then he'll fly off and fly out of the room. So, you know, he understands and he knows, and I love him to death, and I love Blue and Helios both exactly the same, but like, it just baffles me when, like, I take Blue for these car rides or I take Helios out for the car rides, like, how people are like, oh my god, you bring, and it's like, yeah, you gotta socialize your pets, you gotta introduce them to stuff, because otherwise, like, with Helios, like, I know that with Helios, if I don't keep him somewhat socialized by taking him to, like, you know, Starbucks or something like that every so often, or really getting him to try to introduce himself to people or hanging out with people, he's just going to be an angry old motherfucker until he dies. Like, that's how he's going to be. He's just going to be the angry fucking old bird who's now 20 or 21, because I'm horrible with memory and time and dates. If I didn't know the year I was born, I probably wouldn't know how old I am. But yeah, just like, I feel like you got to socialize your birds. You got to give them more than just a tiny little cage to live in. And I'm a big proponent of, like, I will literally only cage an animal unless it is an absolute necessity. So, yeah, a little bit of bird talk here on parrot on Feathers and Friends, eh? Eh? Who would have fucking thought, hey? Yeah. I was going to talk about a game that I wanted to chat about. A little bit, but actually, let's load up Steam here and see what's going on, because with Stom, I'm pretty sure that one of my games is going to be coming out. Ooh, that's right. Eric, if you're listening, I'm happy that we were able to. Cyberpunk has an update, patch 1.6. All right. And then they're announcing Phantom Liberty. All right. Some more shit to come out. That's cool beans. But I want to go to my store, and I want to check out my wish list. Nope, 6 days in Fallujah is still coming soon. Still coming soon. All right, that's fair. But yeah, I was wanting to talk about a video game idea that I had, but I wasn't 100% sure on what I wanted to talk about. So I think there was something, there's a photo in my phone on something I wanted to chit-chat a Rooney-Roo about. Let me go ahead and look up my stuff here. So I saw a meme out there. There's a meme where it's a gentleman in what I'm assuming is a Hawaiian shirt with two attractive ladies, and I'm assuming it's somewhere respective. This says, "Young lad wins lottery and finds not one but two girls who loved him for his personality." And then I found it was funny because I Googled it here. And they're talking about, like, you know, the lottery winner meets the love of his life 2 days after the big win. And it's this really big looking dude. And that's cool. Thank you for sending me that very, very late update there, Facebook. But yeah, no, this goofy looking dude with this chick right next to him. It's like, can you believe it? Breaking news, you know, $181 million lottery winner finds the love of his life after, like. So I've always wondered about that, where, like, you know, a dude is like, he wins the lottery, and then, like, a few days later, like, some chick is like, yeah, I've always loved you, I've had a crush on you, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, motherfucker, what? Like, no, no, no. You know, it's just, it always baffles the ever-living, like, God damn it, fucking phones, stop. So it's always baffled my mind when you take a look at the lottery winners and they're like, oh, I found my girlfriend here and blah, 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 you know, and it always baffled my mind when somebody would win the lottery and then all of a sudden you hear about, like, how they're, you know, actually, like, really, you know, killing it with women or something crazy along those lines. So, you know, the lottery winners always boggle and baffle my mind how, like, they always find a girlfriend or something like that, you know, within days or within a certain time frame. And yet it always blows my mind, because, like, these are common stories here. And this is actually coming from news.com.au or Australia. I love how the Australians are like, what are we going to call our news site? How about news.com.au for Australia? I'm like, all right. The lottery winner now works 7 days a week as a delivery man after blowing fortune. Michael Carroll was a young garbage man when he first hit the jackpot, but he blew the lot and now works 7 days a week to survive. So a 19-year-old garbage collector, originally from Norfolk in the UK, won an incredible £9,736,131, a.k.a. $18.4 million in Australian dollars. What in the fuck is that? What? Okay, let's go to... What was it? 18.4, 18, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so that, oh, that's South Korean won. Australian, okay, 18,000, 18 million. All right. So that is 18 million Australian is 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so it's 12.1 million. So 18.4 is probably 12.5 million US. Not so, yeah, 12.5 mil US. In November of 2002, after spending just £1, or I think that may be a franc, £1 on a ticket. But within 10 years, he had managed to blow the entire lot in his wild lifestyle. And today, he's completely skint, working 7 days a week, delivering coal and firewood to people's homes in Scotland. Quote, I'm a skint lottery winner. It's got me quite a few women, so I don't mind. I'm living in a rented flat, he told the Mirror. I'm happy I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore. No one's going to hit me over the back of the head and try to rob me. I reckon I'm lucky to be alive. If I had the money, I'd probably be 6 feet under. So after becoming a teenage millionaire, Mr. Carroll actually immediately gave away a huge chunk of his winnings, including 1 million francs, each to his mom, his aunt, and uncle who raised him, and then his partner Sandra and Sandra's mother. I mean, that's a pretty good, you know. Hey, look, that, you know, a million franc. I should probably just say pounds, because I'm pretty sure that is the sign for a franc and not a pound. But dude, $1 million to your mom, your aunt, and uncle who raised you. Okay, your partner and your partner's mom. You know, because I'm assuming dad was probably not in the picture. That's reasonable. So that's 5 mil out of 18. You're down to 13. That's pretty awesome. That's like, hey, look, you've been sticking with me here. Go for it. And then he goes, I spent the rest of the money on drugs and hookers, holidays and cards. And it's got a picture of him with a massive gold chain, some massive gold rings on each of his fingers, including his thumb, two earrings, the cheesiest haircut and beard I have ever seen. Like, this reeks of frat dude in his 30s. And then he's got a hell of a gold bracelet around it. He bought a luxurious mansion known as the Grange and began throwing wild parties and hosting demolition derbies in the lawn. His antics actually earned him the nickname the Lottery Lout and the King of the Chavs, a term similar to the Australian bogan. What the fuck is a bogan? An uncouth or unsophisticated person regarded as being low social status. The King of the Chavs. What is a chav? A chav is a young person or of a type of characterized by brash and loutish behavior. Oh my god, going down rabbit holes. Uncouth and aggressive. Thuggish. So he was the King of the Thugs. So basically he was a young, dumb idiot. And now, like, if you take a look at him, like, you're like, dude, two very, very different photos. Apparently, he was homeless for 3 months. That was pretty insane. He eventually found work at a biscuit factory and then an abattoir where he remained for 5 years. Then he got his current job as a coal delivery man and said he was happier now than when he was flush with cash. Yeah, the dude straight looks like dude, that's amazing what money can do to you. But yeah, it was just one of those stupid memes that I saw where I was like, come on, like, for realsies, folks, like, really? This is, like, I was hoping that was real. I was hoping that shit wasn't a hoax because, like, I thought it would be absolutely, absolutely hilarious or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. Oh, yeah, that's right. So there was in the O episode where Mark and Eric, where I did super producer stuff and I just clicked a few buttons. There was a meme that I saw that says it, you know, something that didn't age well at all. Despite being a PG rated John Hughes movie, Weird Science has one scene that could easily place it into a rated R territory that involves two teens taking a shower with the adult female android that they actually ended up creating. And I don't think I've seen the scene. Okay, so apparently I have seen the scene. I've seen it a few times there, but yeah, that's That's an interesting scene. So I had to do this, and I know I'm like picking up two random weird thoughts here as we're going along. But in Weird Science, taking a look at this, during Weird Science, it was made in 1985. So they probably filmed it in like what, 1984? Taking a look at the ages of the Anthony Michael Hall, or Gary, was 17, and Ilian Michael Scott, who was Wyatt Donnelly, the other main character, he was 15 or 16, and then Kelly LeBrock, who was Lisa, was 24, 25 during that shower scene. I thought it was really interesting how they cut the scene for some of the more, what's it called? For some of the more nudie scenes where like it was more showing off a lot of her skin and maybe she was in a bikini or something like that and really close up. It was almost like they had the camera positioned in the shower in spot one and the camera, you could pull everything apart. So the kids were in one part, the gal were in the other. And then as she was basically getting out of the shower and did the like, hey, you guys got to like loosen up or whatever. And then walked out of the shower for that one scene. Maybe it was a little bit less where she was in a bikini, but a 15 and a 16-year-old at the lower end of the age, because it did come out in 1985, and it was probably filmed in 84, 85, for them to be that young with a 23, 24-year-old in that shower scene, even if she's wearing, you know, like the industry standard pasties or, you know, maybe even a bikini bottom or something like that, I don't know, that scene did. That scene did not age well at all, at all, at all. And kind of speaking of like the weird sort of things here, I've been seeing like so many of these weird fucking celebrity bullshit, weird crap that I've been seeing on the internets here. And it's like super fucking odd to me where like there's the Cara Delevingne attends the Met Gala 2022 topless and painted in gold. Like literally she's painted gold. Her hair is a little bit more platinum blonde. She's got like some gold strings on her. And then she's what's really fucking weird too is that her tattoos aren't covered in painted gold. Like she's showing off her tattoos. And then on her nipples, she's got like pasty little gold nuggets that are over top of them that like even show off her nipples, or they're like the nipple is supposed to be there. And it baffles my mind why some of these celebrities do what they do at these Met Galas. Like who was it that I was talking about the other day? Lizzo or whatever basically was wearing like a sheer, like it was like lingerie, to be honest with you. She was wearing like lingerie to the Met Gallery. Was it Lizzo Met Gala 2022? Is this no. Fans defend Lizzo's see-through dress. Yeah, okay, so this was back in 2021 for... Oh, fuck off. I use a pop-up blocker because your fucking website is so full of nonsense that if I try to read the article, it fucking loses its mind. It tells me I can't even read the fucking article. But, like, literally, Lizzo's wearing her underwear and pasties over her lady bits. And, look, I have no problem. Wherever the fuck you want. Wear absolutely whatever you want. Like, who the fuck is this? Who the fuck am I looking at right now? This other person. And I don't agree at all with any of that. You can fuck right off here. I'm gonna read things through all the nonsense. Yeah, see that pop-up that you got there? I fucking hate that. I can't even read the goddamn article. But, like, I see all these people wearing what is essentially nude dresses. Like, why even bother wearing clothes if you're going to wear a sheer dress or you're going to paint your entire body gold with just a pasty over your nipples? Like, okay, look, I am probably horribly mispronouncing your name here, Cara Delevingne. your outfit looks fucking amazing. And I'm kind of one of the, like, I wear a kilt, all right? And I think kilt is the height of fashion out here. And a lot of people, like, super, super disagree with me here. But, like, you look, your top is, like, that old school kind of, not ruffian, but very, very elegant and esteemed individual. Like, this, just look up Cara Delevingne Met Gala 2022. And, like, it shows her top. Like, it's a great top paired with those pants. The shoes that you're wearing are a shade of red that I probably wouldn't have gone with. You've got yourself a fucking pimp-ass cane and some dope-ass necklaces and jewelry to go with it. And your eyes, whatever the fuck is going on with those, it's phenomenal, fantastic. But my question to all of you is, like, why do you feel the need to go topless? Like, why do you feel like you essentially are just going to wear these micro bikinis or these basically when there's literally nothing there? And you're doing these things where you're literally leaving nothing to the imagination. And it's the same thing with the dudes. Absolutely the same thing with the dudes. Like, okay, here's a perfect fucking example. Apparently Harry Styles was doing a show here in the Madison Square Garden. When was it? This was September 2nd of 2022 at 9:10 a.m. Thanks to page6.com, which, by the way, I do not recommend going to page six if you're a person like me and who clicks on a lot of dumb articles. But taking a look here at his outfit, he's basically got a blazer. It's a cool blue and white striped blazer. And then he's got his long pants on with some, I mean, the red Adidas is actually kind of go quite well with it now that I'm looking at it. But, like, he's wearing such a low-cut shirt that it's like, dude, don't wear the shirt. You know, just, like, take it off. Like, I can see your beautiful pecs. I can see that you're a very ripped individual. But it's like, you might as well be wearing a wife beater. You know, you could wear that or just no shirt at all because you're going to get hot and sweaty on that stage as it is to begin with. So my whole thought process to you is, like, why even bother at this point? Like, why bother wearing something that's sheer, or why bother wearing something that's amazing, that where I can literally see almost anything and everything in you, you know, that is on you? And why even cover it up with the pasties? Like, I get there's boundaries, and I get that there's certain things that you'd like to show off or certain things that you'd like to do. But at what point in time do you just go get naked? Like Summer Walker, who's another one here, who has abs that I will never achieve. And she's who Summer Walker is, I don't know. But it's Summer Walker's Barely There BET Awards 2022 red carpet outfit sparks backlash. And taking a look, like, okay, I'm not going to lie. If I could get that kind of, like, abs that she has that I'm seeing in the photo here, she probably did either some... She probably dieted, and what is that where, like, Chris Hemsworth is like, yeah, I was dehydrated as fuck in that scene when he pulled it off. But she's basically wearing a belly dancer's bottom outfit, got gold pasties over her lady nipples, and then she's got what I can call is decoration up and around her lady bits, that's pretending to be a bra out there. But, like, at what point in time do you just go, just go naked? You know, just absolutely go naked. Like, there's no point there's no point in that. I don't understand. I don't understand the outfit for going out in public to basically be topless and naked or some of these photo shoots that these take. Because to me, it's mind-boggling. Like, if I could strut around naked and I look like that, if I looked like Summer Walker, or if I looked like fucking Chris Hemsworth, or if I had that body where I was like, fucking, yeah, I want to show all of this off, I would literally just walk out there naked. I would literally go to the police and be like, look, if I just put this tube sock around my manly bits and wear a G-string, will you arrest me? Because technically I'm not naked. I'm covering up the bits that matter on me. And I mean, I get, like, she's a very gorgeous woman. She's a very beautiful woman. And I would want to flaunt the fuck out of that too. But it's like, you hear about all this backlash and these mixed reviews and this, that, and the third. And I mean, I guess, you know, it goes back to that age old thing where it's like any news is good news out there or something along those lines. But to me, at some point, it's just like, when do you just decide to go fucking naked and call it a goddamn day? You know, like I'd, you know, like honestly, if I was wearing any of these outfits or doing any of these things that I was talking about here, I would honestly just be like, I'd just go naked to some of this stuff. But then again, I'm the kind of guy that when I get dressed up for like a Met Gala event, or if I was invited to any of these events, it would literally be, I would do what I did for my Christmas party. I would actually throw on a hard, I'd throw on my great all black, or the black and the black and gray kilt. I would then go ahead and throw on the vest that I had with the white tie and a black button-up George shirt, and then basically use my tie. I think they're not tie tabs. No, not tie tabs, because that's for your tie. Garters. I would use the garters that we used to use for our blues to basically stretch out our shirt and pull up our socks. So that way I went full on, and then I'd wear my core frams. I think I'd wear my core frams, or I'd get a nice pair of black actual like shoes that weren't core fram. I get those square toed ones, you know, that are out there that I think go really, really well. But like that's the kind of guy I am. I was about to call myself a gentleman. I am for sure not a fucking gentleman. But yeah, I don't fully understand that. And what started me on this deep dive here is that I remember I was looking up something for the NFL podcast, the Evil Mark show that I'm on, and I came across an article that says Kim Kardashian bears her butt in a jockstrap on Interview magazine cover, and she's all blonde, she is like platinum blonde. And then she has dyed her eyebrows blonde as well too, and like you just gotta look at this. Like this is astonishing. She looks like, number one, a totally different person. She gives me 80s mom vibe, with a lot of airbrush and makeup to achieve the look that she has in this interview, and like. I've never found Kim Kardashian attractive. I've never found her to be even the slightest bit like, I mean, if given the opportunity, I'd be like, yeah, I'll see you naked, but that's about it. She reeks of so many things that I just would be like, I'll look at the can, like I'll walk into the shop. I'll take a look around. I'll, you know, like I won't test drive anything because that gives you a false sense of security that I'm going to buy from the shop. But I've never found her attractive. I've never liked anything about her. And she looks so fake, so unreal lit. Like the only photo that looks really good in this repertoire of things is a close up shot where she's wearing a studded choker with a red latex crop, that's probably not what the spaghetti strap top, and the rest of them, she looks like straight fucking white trailer trash through and through. Like, it's. I was talking to somebody that I work with earlier tonight, and I think the comment that I had made earlier was, "You ever hear somebody speak?" And you can't believe and can't fathom what's coming out of their mouth, but you know it's true because it's that person, and it baffles you. That's what Kim Kardashian is for me, because nothing about any of these few photos that I'm seeing her in that were taken for this interview, and with what she was like wearing, would I go, I would have, like, look, if you're going to consult me on anything, no, because she is not Kim. You fucked up. Like, you done fucked. Like, there's nothing. These photos look like I've seen a lot of the photos of you. I mean, hell, half of Instagram reality on Reddit out there is literally just photos of you in that are side by side for the real thing, and nothing is, no. I mean, I'm like the last person to take advice from, but like, no, fucking no buenos. Please, no more. Absolutely no more. Let's go to Reddit. Let's go to Reddit and see what they have. Ooh. Oh, that's right. Did I have that saved? Did I have that saved? Oh my God. Oh my God. You guys. So, one of the most amazing posts that I've come across that I've been searching for a reason or something to tie in here today because I've been looking to find a way to possibly introduce them into the podcast, or I've been wondering about bringing them on and having a conversation with them. And I think I would like to talk to them because, number one, their post intrigued me. It intrigued me quite a bit. And I find people like this very interesting. And I would like to, before I judge them and possibly have them on the show, I'd like to try to feel people out, and I don't like shaming people, but at the same time, I'm like, some people just need to be shamed. Like, I remember when I was getting up there in weight, and I was just like, I gotta fucking do something. I am a piece of hot garbage here, and I need to turn things around. And I did. I was able to for a short bit of time. And to me, this person here is very interesting. Her name is Elaine. She freely throws it out there. And she says that she's looking to be a guest in somebody's show. She's 26. Located in North Louisiana. She is a budding business owner. And this is a direct quote from her. I am 26, located in North Louisiana. I'm a budding business owner, and I sell a variety of botanicals and spiritual products that I had make. Now she's looking to be a guest in someone's show, seeking podcasts, and That's the opener. Hello, my name is Lane. I'm 26, located in North Louisiana. And then this is the next part here. In parentheses, I'm looking to be compensated for my time. Whatever you are willing to, whatever you're willing to give is fine. This is Y-O-U-R, not Y-O-U-R-E. She states that she's a practicing healer and highly spiritual. I have researched and read a lot of books and topics pertaining to the metaphysical, spirituality, occult, witchcraft, etc. It's something that called to me since I was a teen, and I've studied and practiced it ever since. I'm also passionate about art, movies, books, media, video games, and I can talk about all these as well, but my main expertise is spirituality. I am very articulate and well-spoken. I am a great writer. I've written 2 novels and often blog and write articles on my website. I don't have much of a following right now on social media, but I'm looking to grow that soon. I love talking with others and learning from them and sharing my perspective with the world, which is why I want to star as a guest on someone's podcast that centers around spiritual topics. I eventually want to be a solid co-host on someone's show, but I understand that I have to start at the bottom. I just really want to get my feet wet when it comes to the media business, and I think podcasts or even talk radio should be would be great for me. Besides being a co-host, I can help out with scripting. Sense, S-E-N-S-E. Sense is S-I-N-C-E. Since I'm a great writer, maybe sending emails, anything that has to do with writing or communication, or I could be an apprentice. I can also be charming, witty, and I have a sense of humor, so I'm not boring by a long shot. If anyone wants a fresh new voice on their show, I would love to be a part of it. I would make a great guest because of my interesting perspectives, and I have a unique voice that I am passionate about getting heard. Also, does anyone have any recommendations on how I can find a podcast or a show looking for someone like me? And then she goes on to be asking things here. First off, Elaine, I would love to have you on the show. I'd love to ask you about things and have maybe a discourse with you, not a debate, not an argument, but a discourse on number one, your spirituality. You know, what is metaphysical, the spirituality, occult, witchcraft, all that other fun stuff. I'd like to figure out what you believe, because I feel like we make our own fate. We make ourselves the way that we are. We are who we are, and it's not because of some card that is drawn or something that happens, because there's a woman in my life that, and I guess I'll tell the story because I think it's interesting enough that it pertains to this. we had been going for quite a long we had been dating for quite a long time. And just to put it out there, I came across an audio file several months after our breakup and several months that she had been out of my life that I was like, the fuck is this audio file? While I was doing some hardcore deletions and things and trying to clear up a bunch of stuff on my computer, come to find out, she was given a tarot card reading, right? And the relationship up until that point was going very, very well. There were zero indications of anything negative going. But then after that tarot card reading, because of course recordings are time and date stamped depending upon what device that you use them, basically it went sideways. The tarot card reader told her that she was told her that she was unhappy in a relationship, told her that she was not having fun, all based on the luck of a cards of the draw. And it's very interesting to me that you would base your life off of pulling cards or tarot card readings or whatever this metaphysical is, or the occult or the witchcraft. I mean, you could literally take every single astrological sign for the day and akin it to something that happened to you throughout the day because they're just vague enough. And, whenever I have people that I come across, and it was interesting because I had this one lady who's at work who's like, oh, I forget what age she said, but I'm an 18-year-old Gemini. And I'm like, oh, so that's the kind of person you are? That's the kind of individual you are? We're going to base your life off of the fact that you're a Gemini? I mean, it could have totally been the fact that she's telling us her birthday is between date X and date Y, so we know when things are going on. But if you're like, oh, I define my life as I'm a Gemini, and it's like, all right, I don't fucking like it feels like if you take the writings of somebody else, and you're like, oh my God, that's me. I'm literally verbatim a Taurus, but I'm also many of the other, the other signs that are out there. I have a lot of those physical traits as well too. I don't remember them all. All I remember is that a lot of girls back in high school were big on the thing, and I know that I was born during Taurus's time. I'm a Taurus. So, to me, when you come off and you state that you're a Gemini or this, that, the third, I'm gonna hardcore judge you because that's your fun fact is that you're a fucking Gemini. Oh, cool, and I'm a fucking Taurus, but that tells me absolutely nothing about you. So to me, I'm interested in the metaphysical, the spirit, the spirituality, the occult, the witchcraft, and everything else like that. I mean, we could talk about video games all day, every day, and I could totally enjoy that about you. However, I do also want to talk to you about why you feel you should be compensated for your time when you have nothing to bring to the table other than you are, what is it here? You obviously can't spell certain words, or I'm assuming maybe it was text-to-speech that you were using on this. You're great at writing. I don't do any writing for my show whatsoever. It is literally, I have a thought bubble and I run with it and then I run with other things. Like, I've been wanting to talk about this for at least a month now. Second thing here, you're charming, witty, you have a sense of humor, and you're not boring by a long shot. Typically, when people put that stuff in there, I almost know for a certain fact you are none of those. You're absolutely none of those. If you have to sell yourself to me to be on a podcast where you tell me that you're all those, all the above, typically you're not on par with what I'm looking for. Your sense of personality and your humor are kind of meh. Like when somebody's like, hey man, like, because this is how I do it. I'm like, hey, you know who Bill Burr is, right? Everybody know who the comedian Bill Burr is. Bill Burr is not for everybody. It's either you like him or you don't. He's got a sense of humor that you either flow with or you go with. He's got some weird controversial points where he's like, ah, you're like, Bill, I could kind of see that. But that's what I like. I liken myself to is I liken myself to an individual to where he's recognizable, he's notable, yes. But he's one of those figures that you either like him or you don't. If you are trying to tell me that you were all of that stuff, that you're a fresh new voice, you're witty, you're charming, you got a great sense of humor, you're not boring by a long shot, but you're asking me to pay you, You're also telling me that you have no social media presence and zero following that brings it to the table, so that if I brought you on my show, the only people that would be listening to me and the only boost in my show that I would get is maybe an extra few listeners here and there. That's not worth it. If you're going to bring 10,000 listeners to my show, if you bring 10,000 guaranteed listeners to my show and boost my numbers by 10,000 or more, and I can almost guarantee that 1% of those listeners might hang around for quite a little while more, and maybe a few extra, you know, I may gain a few extra 1,000 followers, or, you know, at least 1,000 to 500 followers based on the fact that they liked my podcast. Now I did things with you, like how I got into Joe Rogan. I think it was his interview with the, one of his interviews that he had on, where is Burt Kreischer, Ari Shaffir, as well as Tom Segura, because they led me on. They were comedians, and they're like, oh yeah, we go on the Joe Rogan podcast. And I finally gave Joe Rogan a chance, even after he was massive and huge. That's the kind of, I want somebody that if I'm going to pay you, number one, to be on my show, I need an ROI. If I'm not getting an ROI, there's no reason for me to pay you to be on the show. I get OnlyFans models who are in the top 1% coming onto my podcast to talk to me about things because I had a nice conversation with them and I thought they were brilliant. I'd like to talk to them about what they do and how they do it with. They don't ask me to get paid. They don't ask me for anything. They go, you want me to be on your podcast to talk about video games and dumb shit and a little bit about the OnlyFans stuff and not ask me completely perverted and weird sexual questions except for the two or three that you allow yourself? Yeah, that's my podcast is called Feathers and Friends. I talk about video games, Reddit, and stupid shit. I mean, I'm going to ask you obviously about the OnlyFans stuff and how you come up with your photo shoot and some kind of, you know, pervy questions, but that's because you're a fucking OnlyFans model, and that's where people are going to know you. They're going to come to my show for that stuff, but they're also going to come to the show to be like, oh, wait, you love Destiny's Child 2? Or I didn't know you played Metal Gear Solid and you were a big fan of the original PlayStation 1 version where you had to unplug player 1 and unplug into player 2 to defeat that guy who reads memories and knows exactly what's going on, and that was fucking life-changing and mind-blowing for a PlayStation 1 era video game. Like, look, if I'm going to have an ROI... If I'm gonna pay you, I need an ROI. And if the only thing that you can guarantee me is that you're charming, you're witty, you're a fresh voice, you have a sense of humor, you're not boring by a long shot, and you have no idea how to find podcasts or looking for people like you, and you have no idea where to look, and you're just budding, you're just starting out in podcasting, you've probably only done a few podcasts from the few responses that I've seen here, as well too as when I've snooped on your profile. You're like every other guest that I've brought on, and I don't mind that, but I'm not going to pay you to be in my podcast. So Princess 9611, I'm throwing this out here for you. I'm going to have you on my show. I'm going to attempt to have you on my show. We're going to talk about some things, and, we're going to see how things are going. Because I'd like to talk to you. I'd like to have a conversation, and I'd like to get to know you a little bit better and maybe see if you're worth it. I'll make you this promise. I'll pay you something. If there's an ROI on my side, if I have a massive uptick in numbers of listens out there and I have a massive uptick, let's call it this. If you triple the amount of listeners that I get on my podcast within the typical 2 weeks, because I have what is called evergreen content. If I get triple the amount of listeners on my end here, at the end of 2 weeks, I'll pay you something. That's my promise, but you got to come on the show. You got to come unprepared for anything and everything I'm about to fucking throw at you, because I'm going to throw you some curveballs. I'm real good at that, trust me. And we're going to have a conversation. Now, if you can last... And you can get and I published the episode. Congratulations, you are what you said you were. However, if I cut it short, or I don't think you're going to be, or I don't think that you're going to be a viable guest because you're not going to put out the kind of podcast I want. All right, so Elaine, here's my challenge to you. I'm gonna shoot you a message here, and I'm gonna have you on the show hopefully, and we'll see what we can talk about. So. Maybe episode 141, because I've got 140 in the bag for next Friday. I know who I'm talking to then, and we're going to have an interesting conversation about Pokemon and dildos, probably. two very, very different topics from a previous podcast that I had them on for. But then, yeah, maybe I might have Elaine on about spiritualities and North Louisiana and all the other fun shit. Here's episode 139. I'm going to go ahead and upload this for you beautiful bastards, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. I hope you guys don't mind that I literally just kind of go, yeah, we're jumping into the podcast here. We're starting. No editing, no none of this nonsense. Just record and go, Bambi. Record and go. I'll see all you beautiful bastards later, and I hope that you guys have a great rest of your day. I love all your faces, and I thoroughly enjoy that a lot of you spend as much time as you do with me here, and I've been enjoying the numbers that I've been getting based on you guys listening. So if you're new to the podcast, thank you for listening. If you're enjoying what you're hearing from me, thank you, and I look forward to throwing more content your guys' way as often as I possibly can. Talk to you guys later. Peace.